This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 27 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I want to get something out of the way before we dig into this week's questions for the mailbag episode. And I don't want this to come across as me complaining. I'm talking about this for clarification purposes. I was on Twitter after publishing Tuesday's episode on drafting to your league settings, and in my mentions was a somewhat just joking tweet that said something along the lines of, "Just 11 minutes? What the hell?" Like I said, it was partially tweeted in jest, but I thought that I would talk about this. It's true, a lot of the late round podcast episodes are much shorter than what you'll see across the fantasy football industry. Most shows in the industry go on for an hour or more. This show sometimes is just 10 to 15 minutes. Other times it's 20 to 25. And when there's a guest, it can reach 30 to 40 minutes. It's shorter than most podcasts out there. But my goal is to make this podcast the odd job of podcasts. It may be short, but that's what gives it the advantage. That analogy may have flown over some of your heads, but to those who understood it, you're welcome. And remember, Perfect Dark is just a better version of GoldenEye. Seriously though, guys, this is mostly a solo show. It's just me. When there's no back and forth, not only is it difficult to talk for an hour on a topic, but no one should want me to talk for an hour on a topic. You'd get so bored and turn it off. And if you turn it off, you're not going to hear the totality of what I'm trying to get across. Because, as you know, there's a point to each show. There's a theme. There's something I'm trying to say or dive into with a guest, usually something a little more detailed in nature. And if I rambled and rambled about ridiculous things that only a fraction of you would care about, you'd miss some important stuff. That's why these shows are the length that they are, and my goal is to keep that going in season as well. Now that that's out of the way, let's dig into these mailbag questions. This first question is from Zach Anderson via email. He says, "JJ, fellow Yinzer here, looking for some thoughts on draft pick trading in redraft." Well, Zach, congratulations on your and my Pittsburgh Penguins winning yet another Stanley Cup. He says, "My main league is very heavy with draft pick trades to the point where the first 5 to 7 rounds look nothing like a snake draft. What are some strategies you think work for this year's draft? I feel like content on redraft trades is rarely available and very prominent in serious leagues." And then he says, "I think last year ESPN did a minor segment with analysts just exchanging their first and second round picks. Thanks, Zach." You're right. Content around draft pick trading isn't really there for redraft leagues, mostly because it's not as uniform. With dynasty leagues, you pretty much have roughly the same format throughout. But with redraft leagues, trading picks and keeper rules will vary dramatically. But I like to answer your question by looking at things at a high level, as I generally try to do with fantasy football. If you plot average draft position versus actual fantasy points scored by each position, or actually, let's just focus on running backs and wide receivers because that's all that really matters here, you get a trend line that has a really steep drop to start, and then things start to level off. It's like a slanted lowercase L. What this tells us is what we kind of already knew. The early rounds of drafts produce the highest expected point values, and as you move through the draft, things become more vague. But when you trade draft picks, you can take advantage of this. The reality of the situation is that a second round pick to a third round pick is much, much larger. The difference between those two picks is much, much larger than, say, the fifth round to the ninth round. For instance, using the ADP data that I have, I found that since 2010, the average running back output for pick 10 in a redraft league, PPR draft, is 214 PPR points. At pick 20, 10 picks later, it's 182.69 nice points. That's over a 31-point difference across the season for 10 picks. Now let's look at pick 60. So you're later in the draft, we're looking at pick 60. There, we'd expect a running back to get 132 points. At pick 70, 10 picks later, we'd expect 125. At pick 80, we'd expect 119. And at pick 90, 113. To get to the same difference in expected value that we see from the 10th overall pick to the 20th, you'd have to shift to around pick 100 from pick 60, or almost 40 picks after that initial pick that we were analyzing. Essentially, the difference between pick 10 and a running back choice to pick 20 is the same between pick 60 and pick 100. And again, it's because the drop-off in expected fantasy points is much, much greater in the early rounds than in the middle rounds. The middle rounds are much tighter. They're bunched together with players who are more or less replaceable with one another. In a snake draft, though, you're forced to draft those players. If you can trade them and get more early round redraft picks, go for it. This really is the logic that backs the stars and scrubs approach in auction drafts. This is just a quick way of looking at things, but it 1,000,000% tells you that you should do your best to get early round assets with your middle round picks, as long as you know that your league mates are going to value those middle round picks more than you would. Hope that helps. I'd look to do that this year too. This next one's an email from Jeff Davis. He says, JJ, hope you are well and enjoying your summer. Continuing to listen to the pod and can't get enough. Well done. Thanks, Jeff. I play in four relatively high entry fee, 10-team PPR leagues. Starting lineups are one quarterback, two running back, two wide receiver, two flex, one tight end, and a team defense. It effectively allows for four starting wide receivers given PPR. When playing multiple leagues, are you looking to diversify your players across the leagues, or are you okay with a season that stacks the same players on multiple rosters? All my leagues are auctioned, so I have the ability to diversify a bit more than the restrictive nature of a snake draft. Thanks. Great question, Jeff. My general philosophy is pretty straightforward. For early round picks, I tend to diversify. Though you can overcome a bust in the early rounds, it's going to be much more difficult to overcome than, say, an 11th round wide receiver never seeing the field. I get my differentiation in the early rounds, but I'll still lean on a few guys who I might really like. For instance, it's fine if you can get David Johnson in two of your four leagues, but if I had four first overall picks, I might pick the running back I like most of the big three, select him twice, and then pick the other two dudes once in the other two leagues. Then, where I won't diversify as much is in the late rounds, or the cheap guys in your auction draft. There's not as high of an opportunity cost if things go wrong, and it'll be easier to adjust if they do indeed bust. It's just like investing. If your penny stocks vanish, it doesn't matter to your overall portfolio. But if you put a ton of money into a singular company and it goes under, you're going under too. This next one is from Jerry Porter. I doubt that it's the wide receiver Jerry Porter, but let's get to it. JJ, love the podcast, especially the broad range of fantasy football topics that you've covered already within a few short weeks. Thanks. After your projections podcast with Mike Clay, I am now motivated to build my own projections. However, what am I supposed to do with my projections afterwards? How are you supposed to utilize the projections to prepare your draft board, especially with an auction draft? Or more succinctly, how do I correlate my projections to my draft tiers slash pricing? I've always heard that going into an auction draft, you should have a range of pricing for nearly every player that you'd be willing to draft them at. How does one create that range? Relatedly, how do you account for positional scarcity, relative gaps between positional tiers, and other non-projection related factors in determining your final draft tiers slash pricing? For example, how do I determine the difference in potential price between the two top running backs, David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell, and Ezekiel Elliott? Or on the other end of the spectrum, how do you adjust quarterback pricing down to determine how much you'd actually be willing to spend on higher-end quarterbacks, using Aaron Rodgers, for example? Finally, how do you maintain the integrity of your projections with all of these later adjustments? Thanks, Jerry. So this is an incredibly loaded question, and I will not be able to answer absolutely everything within this question, but I'll do my best to give you some sort of answer. I actually think that answering the last question that you asked first may actually help set this up. When you say, how do you maintain the integrity of your projections with all of these later adjustments, I think you have to first and foremost realize that your projections are going to be wrong. So adjusting something that's inherently not going to be 100% correct isn't as big of a deal as it might seem. I said it on the projection show, and I say this all the time. I don't build projections to give me the answers. I build projections to allow me to understand player situations and see where there could be value. When you run through the exercise of a market share breakdown, you start to see things like, wow, maybe Brandon Cooks will struggle to see a bit of targets this season, or man, Eric Decker may not hit 100 targets this year because the Titans are so run heavy. Without projections and without going through this exercise, you have very little context. But to get tiers, you can simply take the difference in point total from one player to the next and then note significant changes as you move down your rankings list. For instance, let's say I have Le'Veon Bell with 5 points more than David Johnson projection-wise, who has 35 more points projection-wise than Ezekiel Elliott. DJ and Le'Veon Bell would be in a tier. Then Zeke might be in his own tier, depending on where I have LeSean McCoy or Melvin Gordon or Jay Ajayi or whoever's next. I would say, though, to the point that I made in the value-based drafting and adjusting to league settings podcast that I've done over the last couple of weeks, remember to not feel too tied to this kind of exercise. You have to be flexible because you need to embrace variance. Hopefully that answers your question a bit, It was really, really loaded, so it was hard to answer all of those questions on this show specifically, but hopefully that gets you going in the right direction. This next one is from Twitter, at SKIan1997, Ian Wind. He says, could you list your top three sleepers at the running back position and why you think they are such? So first off, I don't really care if people use the term sleeper, but I'm looking at it here as a later round value above all else. So I'll look at backs who are being drafted late, who I'm into according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com's ADP. The first guy is DeAndre Washington. I think Washington has standalone value in deeper leagues this year. He was used slightly more than Jalen Richard last season when Latavius Murray went down. He could catch some passes there. He's in a good offense behind a good offensive line, and he does serve as a handcuff to Marshawn Lynch. Again, I don't handcuff players. I won't draft Marshawn Lynch and DeAndre Washington. I did a podcast on this. However, I'll own a handcuff if he has some standalone value and also has the upside of being the team's early down back if something happens to the starter. Washington, as I mentioned on a previous show, has a much better college profile than Jalen Richard and profiles more as a back who'd get the rock if Marshawn Lynch goes down. And considering Marshawn Lynch will be playing at the age of 31 this year after taking time off, there are absolutely no guarantees for Marshawn Lynch. The next dude is Kareem Hunt. I've talked about this before, so I'll keep it as simple as I can. Spencer Ware last season saw more than 200 carries for the first time ever in his career, including college. 2 years ago, he was a more effective running back who was able to break open and create big plays on the ground in a more limited role. His percentage of runs 2 seasons ago that went 10 plus yards was 12.5%. Last season, it was 9.35%. His percentage of 20 plus yard runs in 2015 was 5.56%, and 2016, 1.40%. Then in the draft, Kansas City not only gets a running back with a fairly high pick for running back purposes, but they traded up to get him. And I think that Kareem Hunt is a pretty talented guy. He wasn't my favorite back in the class, but Hunt ranks well in my model in this good draft class. We know it's a fairly good situation for running backs in Kansas City, and I could envision Kareem Hunt having PPR value to start the season and then potentially carve out a bigger role as Spencer Ware does what he does best. And that's be more of a complement instead of a lead back. For this last running back pick, I wanted to mention Robert Turbin because I think he's actually the non-Gore running back to own in Indy, not Marlon Mack. As much as I like Mack and I think that he's a really good fit in that offense, I don't think that this is the year for Marlon Mack. But I want to talk about Deontay Foreman instead. I've actually talked about Foreman on this podcast before as well, noting that he's an incredibly high variance player. He didn't catch a lot of passes in college, and he could end up being an Andre Williams type running back at the NFL level. Catching passes for running backs at the college level, regardless of how much of a pass catcher they are at the NFL level, matters. Variance means upside, though, too. Bill O'Brien noted in the offseason that they overused Lamar Miller last year, and that's certainly not wrong. Miller might just be a player who will run the ball around 200 times in a season and not much more, allowing for higher efficiency. That might just be what Lamar Miller is. So I think Foreman can carve out a role in this offense to start, and like the other guys, he has upside if something does happen to Lamar Miller. Foreman's in a run-first offense that will end up getting a good number of attempts. So Foreman, to me, is an interesting late-round guy to target this year as well. This next one's an email from Benjamin Bozic. He had 3 questions, but I just picked one. Just so you guys know, I'm trying to diversify the folks who are asking questions so I can get as many people involved with each show as possible. So when you email in questions, try your best to keep them to one. I appreciate all the activity, though. This is a very, very good problem to have. Anyway, Benjamin asks, who is the receiver to own in Detroit? So if I'm being honest, I'm cool with all 3 receivers in Detroit. I'd probably not go all in on Kenny Golladay here in year one unless you're in a keeper format of some sort. And you know I love me some Kenny Golladay. But Marvin Jones, my one true love from last season, is set up in a really, really good spot as well. Jones was very easily the deep threat on the Lions last year. In 2016, Golden Tate, Anquan Boldin, and Marvin Jones each saw 95 plus targets. Jones not only almost doubled Anquan Boldin's yards per target rate, but he had 12.60 air yards per catch versus Golden Tate's 4.86 and Bolden's 5.46 rates. He was essentially more than doubling those guys in air yards each time he caught the ball. He's picking up big chunks of yards with each catch. And with wideouts, you obviously want volume. Jones had 103 targets in 15 games last year, and if he can generally stay healthy and with not a ton of competition there, he could reasonably reach 120 targets. That's pretty dope for a late-round wide receiver. I know what you're thinking. He burned me last year. Well, the whole Lions offense kind of sucked down the stretch last year, too. It wasn't just Marvin Jones. After a 31-point outing in Week 6 against the Rams, the Lions averaged fewer than 20 points per game, which was 25th best in football, after Week 6. Marvin Jones also saw some tough cornerback matchups and secondaries, which contributed to him sucking from a fantasy standpoint. Now, this year, I'm looking at a Lions team that will be able to take a little pressure off of Jones with Kenny Golladay, or should I say hopefully, and at the very least, it'll be a pass-first offense where he can see a lot of targets. If he converts more of those targets this year, he can be a pretty usable fantasy asset. This next one's an email from Lamar Kramer. I had to trim this down a bit for podcast purposes, but Lamar is in a fairly standard league aside from quarterback scoring, and he can keep players for 2 years with one round of equity being taken away for each year kept. So a second rounder this year is a first rounder next year. He says, here are my keeper options. I pick 8th out of 10. Antonio Brown for a round 2 cost, Gurley for a round 10 cost, Tevin Coleman for round 16, Ty Montgomery for round 16. So who should he keep? I think it would be tough to let go of Antonio Brown given you know he's going to be a top asset. Despite the price, which is obviously still better than a typical first round choice, I think you keep him for obvious reasons. He's Antonio Brown and you get elite consistency. So the final spot is between Gurley in the 10th, Coleman in the 16th, and Ty Montgomery in the 16th. I think the obvious choice here, despite being down on him in general, is Todd Gurley. Think of it this way. There's roughly 3 to 4 rounds in equity between Gurley and those two other backs in regular non-keeper redraft leagues. But like I said earlier, the early rounds and the change from pick to pick are much more vital than in the later rounds. So let's pretend in your league and in your keeper costs that Gurley to Tevin Coleman was just 3 rounds, the 10th round to the 13th round. The difference there isn't nearly, not even close, to as great as what you see in regular redraft ADP. What I'm getting at is that the 3 extra rounds that late really shouldn't make a difference here. The opportunity cost is not very high. You should basically be picking the best projected player, and that's Todd Gurley, even though you can only keep him for one more year. There's no need to plan that much in a 2-player keeper league. Play to win now. This next one's an email from Michael Gregson. Hi, JJ. Love the pod. Love the air horns. Thanks, man. I'm going into my second year of fantasy football in a redraft league, and I just wanted to know if you think that there are any 27 rookies worthy of round 1/round 2 picks. There are some talented guys with a promising future, but who is most likely to contribute in a big way to a fantasy team in year 1? Thanks. So there are times where, yes, rookies are worthy of super early round selections. We saw that with Ezekiel Elliott last year. But generally speaking, it has to be a very clear-cut situation and a very good offense. And you're not going to be drafting rookie wide receivers early, so this is really just specific to running backs. Rookie wideouts aren't predictably elite. Michael Thomas's don't grow on trees, and when they do break through, it's not as though we'd know they'd break through. So it's situation dependent, but generally speaking, I fade rookies in the first 2 rounds. That includes guys this year like Leonard Fournette, at least in PPR formats. This next one is an email from Ben Richmond. Hi, JJ. Love the pod. Do you have any tips for diversifying in MFL 10s? I don't want my ownership percentages to be too high for any one player, but I have trouble pulling the trigger on players I don't love when my guys are available. Do I just need to get over the my guy mentality? Are there any specific guidelines you use to diversify your drafts? Thanks, Ben. I think the best way to look at the player pool to help diversifying is to not focus on players that you want, but players that you don't want. You should only get a share or two of players you just really aren't feeling at their ADPs. But it's always important to remember that you're going to be wrong. That's how you get away from taking your guys at certain picks. You're going to be wrong. I wouldn't let ownership of any one player get above the 25 to 30% mark for most dudes, but it's dependent upon where you're drafting them. Like I said earlier on the show, it's important to remember that early round picks carry more weight. So if you don't diversify them and you get it wrong, it's going to be much tougher to come back than with late round guys. But overall, remove players that you don't like instead of focusing on guys that you love. And remember, you're going to be wrong. This next one's an email from Cody Hamilton. How are you feeling about the Seahawks pass catchers this year? I know Baldwin is a stud, but behind him is injuries, Hot Finish, and Jermaine Kearse. feel like ProSize could take a big step forward this year. Thoughts? With love, Oregon Beer Nerd. So yeah, obviously Baldwin is the guy to own in that offense. And I love that you mentioned Jermaine Kearse because my God, was he bad last year. I don't mind ProSize and I like him as a prospect, but I still think that he's 1 year away. Lacy's on a 1 year deal. Rawls is more than likely on his way out after the season unless he blows up this season. So while I love ProSize, I think just logically, he may be a season away. I think naturally I'm most intrigued by Tyler Lockett in the offense though, aside from Baldwin, mostly because of the unknown upside. He really only had two fantasy relevant games last year, but with Lockett, you're basically hoping for a scenario where an electric player continues to build on his receiving skills with experience in the league. It's not very quantitative, I know, but that's kind of where we're at with the Seahawks. They're a mess for fantasy purposes outside of Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. There's room for a third person to step up, but I'd rather it be a wideout with more size. And that may be what inevitably doesn't allow Tyler Lockett to truly be fantasy relevant this year. This last question's from Mark Hawkins via email. Love your Vulcan ability to promote logic through chaos. Thank you, Mark. Two auction keeper leagues, two questions. Number one, would you advise keeping Spencer Ware at $2 out of a $200 budget or not keeping him and save the $2? Number two, keep AP at $9 or keep Cousins for $2 out of $200? Feel free to answer one, both, or neither. Thanks. Best, Mark. So I know that I just said that I try to limit things to one question per person, but these are quick. Regarding Spencer Ware, yes, you keep him. I might, for instance, not be very high on Ware, or at least versus the consensus. But I also know that in his realm of possibilities is an RB1 season if Kareem Hunt does very little in that offense as a rookie. Getting a fourth rounder for $2 is awesome, and that's always important to remember when selecting a keeper. Even if you don't love the dude, getting value is still very important. You could either be wrong about your evaluation, or you could use that player in a trade. With the Adrian Peterson or Kirk Cousins thing, I think I would probably lean Adrian Peterson as long as this is a normal league. I don't mind Cousins at all, but AP would more than likely go for a higher cost, and you're obtaining a player that plays a more important position in fantasy football. Though I still think Ingram is the player to own in that New Orleans backfield this season, I can absolutely see a scenario where Adrian Peterson outscores him and is very viable from a fantasy perspective. Meanwhile, keeping Cousins foregoes the opportunity to keeping AP. There's a larger cost in doing this because you can get guys like Andy Dalton for virtually no cost, just a dollar or two, in your draft. That's the approach that I'd take. That's it for the questions this week, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. As always, please, please, please don't forget to subscribe to the show by searching for the Late Round Podcast pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. And if you're on iTunes and want to give back to the show and help a brother out, it'd go a long way if you left a rating and review. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you all next week.